Hey, Nick.
Hey, John.
I'm having a little bit of trouble coming up with like
help yourself.
Oh, okay. Yeah. That's, I didn't think of it that way. And this is Stranger Still. A good one, Nick.
Is it?
Mm-hmm.
What makes like, you say that?
Because all the acting I'm doing right now. Do you feel this energy?
So much energy. Welcome to Stranger Still, the podcast where we answer the questions you never thought to ask. I'm Nick Wood.
I'm Jonathan Phillip Egan.
Why do you got to throw your middle name in there?
Why didn't you?
Because I don't want the world to know that
says
my
who?
Middle name is James.
Says who? James.
James.
Woods.
Comey.
Oh.
James Woods.
What are we talking about?
Today we're talking about how to help yourself. Just help.
Just like, you know,
your ding-dong dang self.
Your ding-dong, your dang-ding-dong. Help yourself. You walk in your grandma's house, what'd she say? Help yourself to the fridge?
Yeah.
You go in there, you get yourself some Bologna.
Yeah.
You get a little...
You don't, though.
No, I'm just saying you. This is why I said you, I didn't say me.
Oh, okay.
You get some mayo, maybe a little white bread.
Yeah.
You know, make yourself one of those salami mommy sandwiches.
Gross.
Throw everything on there, maybe some pickles. Help yourself. Am I on brand?
And this is Stranger
Still. We already did our intro.
Oh, sorry. I thought we were ending the episode because you covered everything that I was going to cover.
Okay.
So, if you can find us at... Okay, that joke went too far. What are we talking about today, Sean?
Self-help.
Yeah, we are. I've wanted to cover this topic for a really long time because it all started when a coworker that I haven't talked about before. I've talked a lot about a lot of coworkers that just like challenge my sanity.
Mm-hmm.
And this one would just put inspirational post-it notes all over their office. And
teamwork makes a dream work.
Yeah, like that kind of stuff.
Okay.
Like, you can do it today. And they had like one of those tear-off calendars. Like every day you have a new thing, and it was inspirational quotes from people. And I was like, I feel like this isn't working for you.
Oh, no.
So I wanted to know, like, if it actually works. If, like, self-help works, or like putting inspirational post-it notes all over your office works, or... one of my friends' moms, actually, I can say who it was. It was Josh's mom. Josh, we've had on the show.
Yeah.
His mom had, like, post-it notes on her mirror. I think. Maybe I'm remembering it wrong. But I've always been curious because the other thing, too, is, like, you see self-help books everywhere. And if the books actually worked, why would people be buying so many of them?
Maybe there's new sad people now.
Yeah, but, like, wouldn't you just buy the same one that works for everyone? That's my argument for everything.
I don't know, man. It's at the price.
It's like,
you know?
it's my argument to all the MLM scams, which is like, if it worked, everyone would do it. You wouldn't need to market it. It would just market itself.
That's true, yeah. I would pay $14.99 to better my life, but
well, I
wouldn't pay
$18. Good news for you, John.
Okay.
Take a step over here. I don't have any.
Well, I'm in a chair.
I've got spatulas to sell you.
You sound like a Tim and Eric sketch, and I'm in.
That's a real thing. Go watch
Spatula City.
Penn and Teller's BS, but it's not BS. It's more words than that.
I don't like them. Sometimes I do.
Penn and Teller?
Yeah.
Oh, except for when they say weird things.
Weird political stuff. Yeah.
Well, they're libertarian. Is that the one? Is that the one that they are?
Sure.
They're the ones that like want anarchy in the streets or whatever. That's not true.
Oh no. We just lost a half a listener who's pretty progressive but dabbles.
Their thumb was hovering over the pause button. It's still there.
Yeah.
Jeffrey, take your thumb off.
Yeah,
that.
Jeffrey, I still think that the government shouldn't get in your business. Jesus, leave us a review on iTunes.
Still who we are, man. So self-help.
Okay.
I guess this episode is going to be kind of split into two parts. There's self-help and there's motivational speakers. I think those kind of go hand in hand. So how would you, John, describe self-help?
Self-help. Well, it reminds me of Borders books.
Yeah? There's just a whole wall of self-help books in there.
It reminds me of the weird empty rooms that they build in hotels.
Like the conference centers?
Yeah.
Yeah.
What else? When you go to the store and there's those weird mirrors that a lot of parents buy that say, like, this family is about love, respect, not swearing, eating good food, making your bed.
Doing your own laundry.
Uh-huh.
Move out when you're 18.
Yeah. Vote Republican.
Really
yeah. It gets really...
What about motivational speakers?
Say no to Proposition 13. What?
What about motivational speakers? How would you describe that?
Motivational speakers. Tight polos.
Yes.
Khakis. Khakis. That's it. That's how I describe them. They kind of look like retired personal trainers, right?
Kind of. Some of them do. Yeah. They're both similar. Like, self-help and motivational speaking have a lot of similarities, and that it's usually like one person sharing their experiences to help you better yourself.
Yeah.
Some people choose to write that down. Some people just get up and talk about it. Usually the people writing the books are like a psychologist, but that's not always the case. Sometimes it's a blind dude that scaled a mountain. He's like the first person to scale a certain mountain. Can't remember which one it was. Probably Mount Everest.
Kilimanjaro?
Right? Yeah, he killed a man named Jaro. It's really sad. That's the best joke I got. But motivational speakers, I'm sure some of them are psychologists that do speaking, but by and large, it's usually someone who's like, I was homeless for 37 years and I couldn't get off my feet. And then one day I saw a rainbow and I followed that rainbow and it led me to some more drugs because I was high as a cat.
Right. And then after that, I got help. Yeah. And I wrote a book by it.
Yeah. That's usually what motivational speakers are. Now, I am curious, have you ever like attended a motivational speech or read a self-help book?
I swear I probably did at some point. And I know that like there's positive versions of this.
Yeah. Well, I'm not dogging on it. But yeah. I have plenty to dog on. But there's a right way and a wrong way to do a lot of this stuff.
Yeah. That's why I think like if I thought about somebody that goes out of their way to like make sure other people feel good, I think of Maddie.
Yeah.
Who's on our show, Manny Rendelick.
Yeah.
And he kinda like he knows I'm atheist agnostic and he's a priest and he's like, whatever, dude. Yeah. Whatever makes you happy.
Yeah.
So chase like your bliss. That's how it should go. And I feel like that's not how it goes.
A lot of the time, yeah. Because I feel like this is just my perception before I did any research, is that it's just like some dude who went through a lifetime of experience trying to tell me that I can take their experience and make my life better. And that's just not the case.
If you pay the money.
It took you a lifetime to accumulate all this knowledge and learn this lesson. What's going to make me learn it in an hour? Not a whole lot.
My size 12 font. Double spaced.
I remember in middle school we had a motivational speaker show up. And I can't remember anything about it. That's the only time I think I've attended a motivational speaker. I did do Dale Carnegie, which is a form of self-help for work. Work paid for it, and I'm sure it was very expensive.
Did you get a pen?
No, I did not.
Okay.
I got a plaque and a couple books.
Well, people at work seem to be like going head over heels for that guy.
I know. If you are familiar with Dale Carnegie, it's like a 8 or 10 week class, and you would go once a week and you give speeches, and if you get voted on for the best speech, you get a pen. And everyone's like, it's not about the pen, but it's totally about the pen.
Yeah.
It's the dumbest thing in the world. So it doesn't work, in my opinion.
Okay.
I'll take that back. We'll circle back around to Dale Carnegie by the end. But John, if I were to ask you where you think the first self-help
ancient Egypt.
You know what? You're correct.
Cleopatra is probably like, stop complaining.
Yeah, of course.
You'll be happier.
Like, I don't know why. Some part of me was still surprised that ancient Egypt was one of the first places to have self-help books.
To invent everything?
Yeah. To invent everything. Like, it just doesn't seem like an ancient Egyptian type of thing. But they had a whole, like we do today, they had a whole genre of books called Sebayt, S-E-B-A-Y-T, which meant teaching in ancient Egyptian. And I got a lot of this history from a great article on Publishing Perspective. So they're talking about the history of self-help publishing.
What was that written in?
What's that?
That book. What language?
Egyptian.
Okay.
It's a whole genre of ancient Egyptian books.
Like what era?
Like
when they were
2000 BC. Geezing
it up? Okay. Yeah.
They were geezing it
up. A bunch of geezers.
That's a good one. So self-help books have pretty much existed in every culture since then. So ancient Greece, Rome, all of those. This article states that throughout the Middle Ages, there were these things called Mirror of Princes books, which were like essentially behaviors that you should mirror in order to lead a good life.
Uh-huh.
So they told stories of royalty and behavior that they went through and said, like, you should follow this behavior, or this king spat his servants in the eye, you should not do that.
Yeah.
That was kind of the point of the Mirror of Princes books. And the article rightly equates this to like the modern day Chicken Soup for the Soul books.
Oh, wonderful.
Yeah, because they're just stories of people, right? They're not,
you
like
don't even, you've never sat on a toilet if it didn't have that book on it, you know?
Or an Uncle John's bathroom reader.
Sure.
So throughout the 16 and 1700s, the self-help books became more focused on like specific tasks. And for instance, I quote, how to blow the nose, or blowing the nose, haircut round like a bowl dish, and beards of frightful length.
What?
Yeah. So it's telling you how to blow your nose, how to cut your hair like a bowl cut, and how to not have a beard that's of a frightful length.
Oh.
So they became like really specific, and then finally...
I thought we were against this. This sounds amazing.
Well, it was really specific, and then in the 1800s, we got more books along the lines of what we have today, where it's like how to be a better parent,
yeah,
or marriage advice, or
blow your nose and blow your hair.
That was in the 60s.
Okay.
Not the 1860s, 1960s, the big poofy hair.
Right.
Time management, money management, all those things. And now, in today's world, it's apparently one of the top-selling book genres. So it goes like Bible, Harry Potter, self-help books.
Okay. Yeah, that makes sense to me.
Right.
Twilight somewhere.
Man, I really hope no one reads Twilight anymore.
What?
Does anyone read Twilight anymore?
This is a podcast.
What's that mean?
No one can answer you.
Oh. I was asking you specifically. Have you read Twilight recently?
I don't have the answer. No.
Have you ever read Twilight?
No. I played the DVD board game before I read it.
I'll have to ask Shelby. She made me read a couple of them. She's like, you gotta read these if we're gonna be dating.
That's, I don't know, maybe said. They're good. That's kind of a weird request.
Stephanie Myers. I'm just going on a quick tangent about Stephanie Myers. She can write one paragraph really well.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah, you told me about this. You love the first paragraph of Twilight.
No. So here's the thing. There's one paragraph she writes really well, but she also puts that as like the opening. I don't know. It's not a
epilogue.
Prologue. It's like a foreshadow to the middle of the book at the very first page of the book. And that paragraph is really beautifully written. It's got great imagery. And then from that point on, that paragraph to page 283, that is garbage. It's so poorly written. And then you get to that paragraph again, and she like writes it from scratch. She doesn't use the same paragraph, but it uses the same imagery, so it's good still. And then after that, it's crap again.
Okay, that
That's
sounds
Stephanie
great.
Stephanie Meyer in a nutshell.
And wow.
It gave us 50 Shades of Grey. Thanks a lot, Stephanie.
Yeah.
Jerk.
I mean, they're fine. They're just not for me.
I don't think they're fine. I think that they are a stain on literature.
Whoa.
And have... Well, the problem is I think that they've created a really bad trend in literature. Like, this is... Okay, this is going to go off on a tangent for a little bit. Because I get really heated about Frozen, because I don't think it's a good movie.
Right.
And I don't think it's bad. I just don't think it's as good as everyone makes it out to be.
Never seen it.
And, well, the plot's all over the place. The lyrics of the songs are dumb, and the animation is whatever. It's not pushing the boundaries at all. Whereas movies that Disney has also done, like Big Hero 6 or Moana, push all those boundaries. They push, like Moana pushes the lyrical boundaries and the animation boundaries. Big Hero 6 certainly pushed the animation boundaries, but no one cares about that. They care about subpar movies like Frozen, so I get less of the good things that I want because people want more Frozens.
Hmm.
Now does my anger sound valid?
Nah.
Okay. Well, someone out there understands what I'm saying. So back to motivational speakers. I don't have as lengthy of a history on motivational speakers. Actually, I don't have a history at all, but pretty much as long as people have been overcoming odds, people have paid those people to hear about it.
Yeah.
And that's motivational speaking in a nutshell.
I don't know. It probably evolved a little bit. I think an Egyptian king's probably like, you know, self-help meant... I'm helping me.
Yeah.
The king.
Yeah.
You're helping me too.
Yeah. Well, I think that this certainly spawned from that. Like, you had people that were self-help gurus going around saying,
I'm the best and you should obey me.
Well, that's just a king.
Self-help.
Like,
for myself.
Daryl Carnegievegris III from 1280. No. What I'm trying to say is it certainly came out of somewhere. It wasn't an industry a long time ago. Now it's an industry. People make a living off of motivational speaking. I don't have a history, but I do have an article from 2014. It was on motivationgrid.com with the top motivational speakers in the world. And let me see if you can spot a trend.
Okay.
So the first one is Eric Thomas. He was a high school dropout, became homeless, and now lives off of motivational speaking. He says, if you are truly committed to your goals, you will be successful. I'm sure there's more to it than that.
Mm-hmm.
But then we got Les Brown. He was put up for adoption when he was in grade school and classified mentally challenged. Now he says, you need to have a lot of confidence in yourself.
Okay, cool.
Tony Robbins, he's like really famous. Even I've heard of him. I don't know what he's done, but he's really tall. And he says he's 6'7". And
you got to grow really tall if you want to make it in this world. That's what he says.
Well, he says that in his talks, he walks you through all the changes you need to make to succeed toward your goal.
Yeah.
And then we've got Nick Vujicic.
Mm-hmm.
Vujicic. You pronounce that.
Vegetic.
He was born with no arms and legs and says you can never give up.
Okay, yeah. Why would you give up?
Like, all of these are such no-brainers. Like, you need to have self-confidence.
You know,
you need to stay committed to your goals, and you got to have self-confidence.
I guess sometimes people need to hear that, but I've never been a person that felt like I needed to hear that.
No.
And also, neither. I've never been a person with two first names as their first name and last name, so I can't be a self-help person.
Like Tony Robbins or
Les
Brown?
It seems like they...
Eric Thomas?
I mean, maybe you got some out of there, but I feel like if you want to be a real good one, your name has to be like Ricky Steven.
Yeah.
Or something, you know?
Yeah. I like, know what you mean. That definitely sounds like motivational.
Nicholas Robert.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or have three names. There's no three namers on this list, but there is a list later. Steve Stevenson.
Yeah.
So my takeaway from these guys is, again, they've spent a lifetime overcoming obstacles. You can't experience what they experienced in a lifetime in just 1 or 2 hours sitting in a conference room at the Marriott. Do you want to take a guess at how much these people get paid? This will just ruin your soul. Just take a guess.
I don't know. That was a question, and my answer is no.
You don't want to guess?
I don't want to guess. I don't think I'm going to get in the ballpark.
Right, just give me a rough number.
A rough number? Yeah. I don't know. If Hillary was getting paid by banks to speak to people for how much... hundreds of thousands. I would say these people doing the same type of deal.
No, it's not that. I mean,
with $40,000 a speech or something.
40,000, close.
A car, yeah. And a half.
You're really close. So according to this one article, non-celebrities get anywhere between $1,500 and $30,000 for an event. There's apparently like public speaker networks, like ProSpeak. And
so they
like that.
Collect a commission?
I would assume so, but they normally charge between $2,500
and $10,000.
Okay. So kind of narrowing the scope a little bit. But then it said that celebrities, probably like Tony Robbins and the like, Arnold Schwarzenegger, that came up on a list, celebrities' starting rates are usually $50,000 and only go up from there. So you're in the right ballpark.
I want to do an experiment. We could do this after, maybe.
Okay.
Watch an entire one of those. And write down what they say.
Yeah.
Like the points they make. Okay, believe in yourself. One.
Yeah, got it.
Two.
Someone already did it.
Okay.
They're called Ono, Ross, and Carrie.
That's true.
They went to a real estate scam conference, and Tony Robbins was there giving a motivational speech. So there you go. You can just listen to their coverage.
That's wonderful. I got scammed once, Nick.
You did?
Yeah.
Tell me about it.
I wanted to be an actor, so I went to one of those actors scam places.
Like the talent scouts?
Yeah, the talent scouts.
Really? How did that go?
Well, I walked in, and they do this little like motivational speech type deal where they're like,
you can do it.
You can do it.
Here's out there.
Yeah, here's how it works. Make sure you never wear black or white. You always got to wear like a nice bright color and show
Look
up.
Look at you now. Every time we've got, show up here, you're wearing black.
Yeah, we got 100 of you, and we're not going to get all of you, but we'll promise to get a few of you. And then like the next day, you get a phone call. Hey, we really liked your look. We think we could cash in a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
We would definitely want to work with you.
Yeah.
It's only $500 a month or something. Like they start getting into the scam.
Oh,
and I was like, I was a young kid. I didn't know.
It's so predatory. Well, yeah. Every time, like anytime someone markets to kids, I'm immediately wary.
Yeah.
What do you want to?
Yeah.
Yeah.
My mom was like, nah, it's a scam.
Yeah. And it's just like Shopkins. You're marketing to children. That's a scam. And that's another freaking thing that's changed the industry that pisses me off.
Shopkins and Twilight, bud.
I don't want to spend $50 for the one action figure I want. Just mark it up to $15 and I'll buy the one I want instead of paying $5 10 times to get the one I want.
Mm-hmm. Or sometimes, it's the same thing with McDonald's. Sometimes you got to bribe the person there. Like,
I want good.
Yeah, I want a Yoshi.
Yeah,
I don't
back
want another,
in the day when
I
they
have
had,
five Luigis.
Back in the day when they had cool toys like Beanie Babies and Pokemon cards.
They have Mario right now, didn't they? Or like a week ago.
No,
they did, dude. I don't go to McDonald's. They put beef in their fries.
They do. Sorry to anyone that just learned that.
Yeah.
Anyway,
gotta find out someday.
So before we run, and I know that you were itching to go out and grab a self-help book or book a motivational speaker for just the two of us, we should probably explore whether they work or not, because that's like the point of our show. And we'll always say on the show, some of what happens is inevitably going to be placebo, and that's fine. Placebo is fine by us. That works for you. But it's not cheap. None of this is cheap. The self-help books, like, you got to buy one, you got to buy another, and they're not cheap. And then it's the motivational speaker is...
Yeah.
At the very least, a couple grand. And that's when it becomes predatory.
And
I think that
there are times where they're going to dabble into fake science and say, gotta get this magnetic bracelet to go with
absolutely.
The book.
You know? I think Tony Robbins might have, I don't know, I'll have to go back and listen to the episode of Ono, Ross, and Carrie. But they'll definitely try to sell you their books and DVDs while they're giving their speeches or outside of their speech zone. Yeah. By the way, buy my book. It's out there. I'll sign your book.
Is it like a concert? Do they have like $70 t-shirts and stuff?
Probably. It's okay. Not Kanye, but I'm sure they have something ridiculous.
Yeah.
So, anyway, placebo, whatever. And the other part of what we're going to talk about is that a lot of it comes down to psychology, and that's not an exact science, so we're well aware of that on this podcast. Just know that as we go into this. Most of what I'm going to talk about can be applied to both self-help and motivational speaker, but I want to start with motivational speakers.
Okay. Yeah, let's start with, I want to know more about Tony's life, you know? And I have an idea for him for a t-shirt.
Yeah, go for it.
It's going to say Robin's Hood.
Yeah.
And it's going to be Tony Robbins dressed as Robin Hood.
Yeah.
And then underneath it's going to say, steal from the poor, give to the me.
The meaty.
Yeah.
So, I find it interesting that at like one point in time, they were called inspirational speakers, and then they were motivational speakers. And now, when you go and research them on the internet, uh-huh. most people just put them under the umbrella as keynote speakers. Which
yeah.
keynote like goes farther than just motivational speakers.
Can I tell you something?
Yeah.
I don't know what keynote means, Nick.
It's...
I've heard it a million times.
A note is a post-it note.
Okay.
And a key it's like unlocks the important... that post-it note.
Okay. That's two different things.
Yeah.
It's like important notes.
Watch The Skeleton Key. It's a really bad movie.
Okay. I'm more confused.
So after looking what some kind of psychologist had to say about motivational speakers, I think this transition makes sense because there's one Dr. Jim Taylor, PhD, he points out that...
Two first names?
Yeah.
Must be a good
well,
one.
Well, no, he's counteracting motivational speakers.
Okay,
so
he used to be one.
He used to be
with
one, two, now
with
better.
Names like that? Yeah.
He got better. So he points out that inspiration is way different than motivation. And most of the time, when you leave a quote-unquote motivational speaker, what you're feeling is inspiration, because that's all that someone can put in you. They can't put the motivation in you. That's on you to do. So you might go to one of these and you hear blind man scale a mountain. You're like, wow, I can do anything. But then that doesn't create any motivation. So you go back to your normal life, and 3 days later you wake up and you're like, oh, that mountain, whatever. I don't give a crap anymore.
Yeah.
The other issue that Dr. Taylor brings up is something that I've already alluded to, which is the experience of the motivational talk or reading a self-help book only lasts so long. And after that, you don't have that, like, experiences and learning come from extended time.
Plasticity.
Spent with, yeah, like you
mold your brain and like practice.
You spend a lot of time figuring this stuff out. So maybe the inspiration will last 3 days after your motivational speaker putting down that book, but then the 3 days are passed and you're back to your normal life.
Okay, but counter argument, what about a self-help class?
Yeah, well, that's a subcategory. I'll get to that.
Okay.
Because I'm on motivational speakers right now.
So all right, okay, Nick,
thank
geez.
You to back up.
I'm just trying to find the keynotes, you know?
So, like I said before, I've also seen people with the post-it notes that are supposed to inspire you throughout the day. And again, that's like small little bursts of inspiration. It's not motivation. There's a plethora of things out there.
Oh, sometimes I'm into them.
Into you know? Inspirational post-it
Death
notes.
Is pretty far away. That's one I always keep on my desk.
It's
Death is
going.
Pretty far away.
Maybe.
Anonymous.
In parentheses. I found a bunch of stuff where you can get inspirational quotes texted to you each day. One person recommended downloading these alarms to put on your phone that were like the sounds of forests as you're waking up, etc., etc. Vision boards are really popular as well, and I bring these up because there's actually a study done on if vision boards work. And it wasn't vision boards specifically, but the idea of the vision board is that you have this board, you put up pictures of what your end goal is and like inspirational quotes directly related to that. So let's say you want to run a marathon, you put up pictures of people crossing that finish line or holding up a trophy or
yeah.
just running in general. And what they did in this study, I won't spend too much time on it, they took five experiment groups, and in those five groups they had one group envision like that perfect end goal, them crossing the finish line and jumping up and down. They had the other group envision themselves practicing and training. So in the first group they had people studying for a test. The second group was a group of golfers and tennis players that wanted to improve their game. There was a group of people that wanted to focus on weight loss. There was a group of people focusing on asking someone on a date. Then the last one was focused on getting their dream job after graduating, whatever. So after all that was said and done, they found that the people that envisioned their training or practice or studying or whatever it was that would get them to that goal were more successful than the people that envisioned the end of the goal. And part of that is, we'll get into this a little bit more in a second, but part of that is just setting specific goals and just envisioning those specific goals is more likely to get you there than just being like, I'm going to cross that finish line.
Yeah.
You got to get to that finish line right. By running every night and sticking to it.
I have a vision board. It's about making our podcast grow.
Yeah.
And instead of having a board that says, you know, 30,000 plays a day, I have messages of me messaging my personal family saying, please listen, please leave a review, please. And then them blocking me.
Yeah. I have those too. Right. I hacked into your account. So, self-help. I read one article that said, for self-help books to work, you have to treat it like it's your therapist. Or everything the thing's telling you, you've got to like internalize it and go out in the world and do it. And I think that part of that is true.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm more likely to trust self-help books because you're more of an active participant in the activity.
But the problem with all this is it's not personal.
It's not personal. But at least with a book, it takes it farther than a motivational speaker in that you read all this stuff, you close the book, you go out in the world and do it, and then you get to pick up the book back up. And that's your own choice to pick up the book.
Yeah.
And this article I found on Medium, this is kind of a weird comparison, but it'll make sense in a second. They talked about this story from Betty Crocker. You know who they are. They got the red spoon on their packaging.
I've seen her frosting.
Yeah. When they first came out, I don't...
Vegan, by the way.
Is it?
Mm-hmm.
Nice. I can eat it guilt-free, right?
That's right, dude. So can I.
So when they first came out with a cake recipe...
Death-free.
All you had to do with this cake recipe was add water. And they're like, this is going to go over great. All you have to do is water and you have a cake.
Mm-hmm.
And nobody bought it, supposedly because they felt like they had no agency or ownership over the process. So supposedly, all they did was add the step where you add two eggs, and then it went over like gangbusters because now they had the sense of ownership over the process. I don't know if that's true or not. Came from Psychology Today, which I've had some problems with in the past, but...
Okay. We're going to do an episode in the future about...
Psychology
Today. Food marketing. No, how food marketing.
It is?
Yeah. Yeah, because I remember hearing stories about... I saw something on Reddit where it was like, they changed the box to values to a family size, mm-hmm. and added more,
mm-hmm.
and then like changed the price, and then actually made it more expensive and made it smaller,
yeah.
because the first one was limited edition.
Yeah.
But cereal boxes. Like, yeah. I heard this whole thing.
There's a lot of dumb stuff out there, like... making an industry for something that people don't need, like soda. Like the whole...
Or if you call something family size, it doesn't have to have a comparison. Mm-hmm. It could be a smaller than the regular size, yeah. but you could still make more money.
I've always been cautious of like shampoos that say 33% more.
Yeah.
More than what? The last time I bought it?
But they make it 34% more expensive.
Yeah, yeah, maybe. Yeah, we'll talk about that another day. But the other thing that you kind of talked about is...
Oh, shampoo's not food, though.
That's true.
Yeah, don't do that.
It happened with Chex Mix, too.
Okay.
Well, I think Chex Mix has said, like, 30% less fat than what?
Yeah, that makes sense. But have you ever, than the leading brand chip, Nick, have you taken, like, a little taste of a shampoo? If it's, like, a strawberry flavored?
I haven't.
Have you been tempted? It's like,
no.
Like a fruit, like a Garnier Fructis, like, you
I
know?
I have not. Have you?
I don't know.
That makes me think you did. So what you were talking about before is a lot of people try to extend the experience by offering classes like Dale Carnegie. They have that, I think it's 8 week now, maybe it's 6 week, I don't know. And I've heard people raving about it, and I went to it, and it didn't do a whole lot for me. And certainly 2 to 3 years later, I barely remember anything from that class other than how to strike up a conversation.
Oh yeah, I could tell you. Your life's a mess, dude.
I know, look at this office.
Obviously.
My whole thing is... The whole idea, and I think I talked about this already, but the whole idea of self-help and motivational speakers is predicated on the fact that they don't work. If they worked, they wouldn't be the number one selling genre. People wouldn't go buy the person's next book. They would just all buy the same book because it all works. And they want to pay $50,000 for a speech from this person. And they want you to be inspired for a little bit and be like, yeah, I'm going to go out there. I'm going to conquer the world. I'm going to do everything I've ever wanted to do. And then it doesn't work. So you come back and pay them again for their speech at the Marriott.
Okay.
That's my chief complaint with self-help. For me, I think it's pretty clear where I think you can get real stuff out of there. And that's keep the motivation going. Because the inspiration is... It makes, like, it's good if it gets your motivation going, but you have to get the motivation going to do anything that you're hoping to do with self-help. And there's the Medium article that I talked about before had some really good stats about it. And they said, like, how to keep your motivation going according to science. And then, I mean, they just had stats, which is a science. But the first stat that they had was about New Year's resolutions. And apparently 93% of people make New Year's resolutions, but only 8% go through with them. And that's simply because you set your goal, you wake up a week later, and you're like, I don't care anymore. 5 pounds, who gives a crap?
Yeah. My New Year's resolution was to have a New Year's resolution, which is self-fulfilling.
Yeah.
So you can call me one of the 8%.
Did you have one, though?
That was it.
Oh, God, my brain just hurt. So their first bit of advice is to set specific and realistic goals. And I'm talking like, I'm going to lose 5 pounds in the next 3 months. You give it a specific value and a time frame.
You know, I'm glad you said months. I thought you were going to say hours.
Yeah, I'm just going to purge and
I'm going to lose this arm. I've been wanting to get rid of it for a long time.
Just lop that puppy off.
Get a machete?
Yeah, I got to sharpen my machete.
Never liked it.
What?
My left arm. More ready.
I thought you were talking about your machete. So, according to the American Psychological Association, not Foundation, people who set a solid goal are 90% more likely to achieve it. Which, when I say that, I feel like John Tesh, and I'm like, I don't really buy into that. Because How do you measure that? You
can't.
Like, how do you say, yeah, that goal was specific enough, and yes, you reached it, you're one of the 90%?
Let's see, we're going to do a new segment on the show that's going to be reoccurring. And
called
sporadic.
We're not
John Tesh. No, it's called Realistic Facts.
Yeah.
Give me that stat again.
It was, according to the American Psychological Association, people who set a solid, specific goal are 90% more likely to achieve it.
Okay. Translation.
Yeah.
Set a goal, then you're more likely to do it.
Yeah.
Why do you need that numbers in there?
Yeah.
How big was the study?
Who knows? Okay. Probably like 3 people. They also say celebrate small victories. So this sort of ties back to the practicing and training part of it. Focus on the journey instead of the destination is what I would say. One way of doing that is stopping to remember and celebrate the victories along the way.
Yeah, put it on a piece of wood and sell it to my mom.
Yeah, what? I don't know what that means.
Yeah, it's like a Tuesday morning quote, you know?
Yeah.
It's like something you'd put on a plaque and hang on your wall.
Oh, Tuesday
in your
morning.
Kitchen.
I forgot that was a store because we just got one in town.
Yeah, you did. It's a great store. It's all that stuff. It's inspirational quotes and flower pots.
Yeah. You can also help by getting people to hold you accountable. So you can tell them, if I don't lose 5 pounds, I owe you $50. And then you're going to want to not give them $50. And one other thing that wasn't in this article but sort of helped me out is not breaking the cycle. Start something, don't break the cycle. So you set a goal and focusing on the journey, every day you do something to work toward that goal. So Let's say you want to write a novel.
How about instead of a novel, how about podcasts? Because we did that and we got on a network and we...
Well, a novel's easier for me to do.
Okay.
Because my point is it doesn't have to be grandiose or anything. Like some days you'll write one word or a sentence and other days you might write pages and pages, just anything to get toward the end of that goal. And don't break the cycle, because it's a lot easier to stay in the cycle, because then you don't want to be like, oh, I'm 30 days in, I don't want to break it now, than it is to stop it and then join it back in.
Yeah,
because then you're like, oh well, I broke it last time 30 days in, why even try anymore?
I get
it's
that
a lot of psychology, you gotta like mess with your brain a little bit to get there. But I don't know if there's any science to that. And it's really easy for me to sit here and say, do this for motivation.
Become a motivational
speaker.
Exactly.
It's really easy for self-help books and motivational speakers to do that as well. And I guess my real point is, there's one thing isn't going to work for everyone. And sure, this works for some people. I'm sure it does. I'm sure people have had plenty of success stories. Uh-huh. That's great for you. But don't sink hundreds of dollars into something if it's not working. And there's certainly a logical fallacy out there where people will think, well, I've already sunk this much money into it, I gotta see it all the way through to the end. You don't have
work.
To.
Yeah.
Because you might only be halfway through spending thousands and thousands of dollars. If it's not working, give it up.
Tony's robbing you, man.
That's a better pun than you said earlier. That's our shirt. Tony's robbing you.
Tony's robbing you.
His is Robin Hood, and ours says Tony's robbing you. So just remember, failure's okay. That leads to experiences, and experiences lead to a lucrative career in motivational speaking.
Wow.
Like how I tie that all together.
So how do you actually help people, Nick?
How do you help people?
Yeah. How do you...
You got to find that...
Self-enable.
My best advice is you got to motivate yourself. And sure, like motivational post-it notes or motivational posters or books or whatever might get that inspiration going. But don't expect that to do all the legwork for you. You have to motivate yourself. And I agree with Dr. Taylor that those are two very separate things. That inspiration is something that someone can bestow on you, but they can't... bestow motivation upon you.
So yeah, I've never thought about that.
Yeah.
And if I'm thinking someone, imagine being outside of a Marriott.
And right? Looking in.
A bunch of people coming out.
Yeah.
And someone says, man, I just feel so motivated. Versus someone coming out and saying, man, I feel pretty inspired.
Yeah.
I wouldn't have think that that's a different thing. They probably don't know if that's a different thing.
Yeah.
But if you break it down.
I think you have to look at it as two different things.
Yeah.
And I think that's the goal of this. People don't think of it as two different things. So I don't have all the answers for you. And maybe we didn't discern whether or not these work, but most of the time they don't.
Yeah.
They don't have any stats around it or anything. But you got to find that motivation if you want to change your life. Now, do you feel inspired to find motivation?
Yeah, sure. Yeah, whatever. I guess I'll take control of my life.
Yeah, I guess.
Thanks.
It's whatever, bud. Man. Who cares?
Yeah.
It's just my life.
If your last name was like Nick.
Nick.
I might believe
Nicholas
you more.
Nick. Yeah. It's my name now. Should we, I got a game for us today.
Okay. These are good. I like these.
After the break, I've got 8 real or fake self-help books, and you're going to guess
boy.
Which one's real.
Oh boy, I'm very
some good
excited.
Ones.
Yeah.
So before we get there, is there anything we need to recap, or did we just do that?
I'm not sure. How come we don't ever tell people where to find us before the break? It's always after.
Yeah, do it.
StrangeSocial.com.
I started the music already.
Oh.
Okay, the music is done, John.
What okay, yeah,
saying?
Thanks. I don't know. You got me all confused now, because I was wondering if Mark Wahlberg says I'm meing the audio. Instead of a marking the audio.
Oh, I get it. No one's going to get that because we edit out the
marks. We edit out the marks. Nick marks the audio so we know where to put the
Speaking of where you can put
thing.
Things, where can people put their eyes to find us?
On StrangerStillShow.com.
And you can also find us at Facebook.com/group/StrangerStill.
Yep.
A lot of S's.
Just go to the search bar
and
type
it in.
StrangerStill.
We're the good one.
We're the good one. We're the second most popular one. So
is that still true?
There's blues... Bluegrass group that doesn't put a podcast episode out every Wednesday.
Yeah.
And yet.
Is that true? Hang on. I'm going to look this up. While we're there, why don't you tell people what podcast we were on recently?
No, I'm still on this. Nicholas, people can add their friends to our Facebook group.
You can.
You have the ability. We enabled you to add your friends. If you have a buddy or an enemy that you want to add in there, like science or hate science, you want to, prank them with some facts.
We're so close. We're so Glenn close to this.
Glue close. That's pronounced glucose.
This bluegrass group has 418 and we're at 380. We are coming for you, bluegrass.
Oh, you're going down. Yeah. Not only that, but I'm going to shame their families.
Yeah. It's kind of funny because a long time ago, I was like, I will never beat them. And we're almost there. We're 38 away. I can do math.
You didn't read enough Tony Robbins. I thought we would.
If you want to experience more of us, there's plenty of ways you can do that. Specifically, we were just on another podcast.
Yeah.
It's called I'm Super Stoked Podcast.
That's right.
They just put up the episode and we talked about
horror stuff.
Horror stuff.
Spooky monsters.
It's not horror stuff. It's horror stuff. When I would get it right.
Horror.
Yeah. It's more, we swears. We do some swears and we make some inappropriate jokes. So if that's not your bag, probably don't listen to it. But we had a good time with Sean and AJ talking about like, cryptids and urban legends and all kinds of stuff. Mm-hmm. And how to make a good horror movie. Horror movie.
How to fix Slenderman.
How to fix the Slenderman movie because it was atrocious. So go check that out. You won't be sorry. Also, we're part of the Flying Machine Network.
Yep.
So if you want to support us, you can go to patreon.com/flyingmachine.
Or StrangerStillShow.com/shop.
Or flyingmachine.network. That'll take you to the network landing page, and you can find the Patreon from there. We want to do a visual format, and I think we're pretty close to like being able to do it.
Yep.
So
we're going
to
stream on Twitch, y'all.
We are.
And we're going to play live games with you.
I don't think that's true. Maybe we'll play like Quiplash at the end of each recording session or something.
I have some ideas.
Yeah, okay.
I found some live polling apps.
Yeah.
It's going to be good.
All right, we'll do it. Mm-hmm. There's other good shows on the network. Recently, I'm kind of sad because Edgelord August is over, which is the thing that divisive issues in Oops, I Talked Politics do, where they just get really heated about political and comic book things.
Yeah.
It was a really good month for that. And they talked about Alan Moore was the one I was going to bring up because I had this really great view of Alan Moore because I enjoy like Watchmen and V for Vendetta and stuff. And they changed my view on it.
I'm
not very happy about that because I really enjoyed those comics. No, I can still enjoy the thing he created and not enjoy him, right? They talk about that in the episode, so they'll have an answer for you over at Divisive Issues. Go check them out. It's a good show. Bunch of sweet dudes over there.
Yeah.
John, I have a game for us. I already said what it was, but I'll say it again.
Okay.
I have.
If you're just joining us, you're weird.
You just skip to after the break, unlike everyone else who's
listening. Why are you doing that?
I've got 8 real or fake self-help books. I'm going to have you guess which ones are right. And if you get 4 of these correct, I will give you a pep talk.
Look at this.
But if you don't, I'll give you a neg talk.
Oh, geez, dude.
Yeah, I'm going to make you feel like garbage. So the first one, I'm going to say a word that doesn't normally appear on this podcast.
Okay, well.
But I'll explain it afterwards.
All right.
It's called How to Manage Your Dick.
Okay.
And dick stands for Destructive Impulses and Cyberkinetics.
Yeah. How many times a day do you think that guy says, well, it'll get their attention? Because it's definitely real.
Exactly. It's got like a rocket on the cover.
Yeah.
By Sean Joseph O'Reilly.
That's real, dude. That's totally real. Because,
well, unfortunately it is.
Yeah. The reason being,
mm-hmm.
you would not have said, oh, I'm going to have to say this word.
Why?
If you made it up.
Oh, no, no, no.
You would just not use that word.
There's plenty of things that I don't think that I would normally say on here. Like, okay. How to pee sitting down. Tips for hip dudes by Stan Browning.
Okay, hold on a sec. Is this number two?
Yeah, this is number two. No, it's number one.
Okay. I see what you did there.
Yeah.
I'm going to say Stan Browning is his name?
Stan, not Stan Browning. That's not a name.
Okay, it's just gross, dude. Stan Browning, how to pee sitting down,
mm-hmm.
and other tips for hip dudes.
Yeah.
Jeez, man. I'm going to say it's fake.
It is fake, but I based it on a real book called How to Pee Standing Up, Tips for Hip Chicks. So that's a real
book. Wow, man. Is that like a funnel system?
I don't want to. There's no pictures on the cover.
Thank goodness.
So I don't know. The third one I have here is anyone can love Jesus, but who can love you? This is in print, well, like the subtitle, Dating in the Modern Religious Era by Nancy Diggs.
I dig it. It's real.
I dig it too. It's not.
Wow, you did that?
I did.
You even put parentheses. And you specified that there are parentheses.
Yeah. I will say that I got a lot of these were inspired by real ones, and one of them was like, is God in your bedroom? And that's where I came up with this.
Gross.
So you're two
one
for
or
two.
No.
Two for three.
I got right? one right, and I got one
you
wrong.
You got the second one right. You said it was fake, and it was.
Okay.
Being one.
Yeah.
So you got two out of three. So two more, and you get a motivational pep talk.
Great.
Number four? I can quickly number these just by changing the formatting here. Number four is How to Date a White Woman, Practical Guide for Asian Men by Adam Kwan.
You wouldn't make that up. That's real. That's awful.
Unfortunately, it is. Yeah, you're right. I wouldn't make that up.
How to Date a White Woman?
Yeah. It looks really like an older book.
But what does it mean?
You know?
What's white woman culture?
That's a question
culture?
For Adam Kwan.
Okay.
Number five is Shut Up, Stop Whining, and Get a Life. A Kick-Butt Approach to a Better Life by Larry Wingett.
This is a tough one. Because this is has your voice all over it.
But I don't know how to feel about that.
But I'm not sure.
I don't know how to feel
Can about you read it to me one more time?
Shut Up, Stop Whining, and Get a Life. A Kick-Butt Approach to a Better Life by Larry Wingett.
I'm going to say it's fake. I'm going to say you made it. I'm going to say it's close to a real one.
It is a real one.
Wow, dude.
Yeah. The cover has like a dude like kneeling down. He's got like his
hands
on his...
Is he pointing?
Huh?
Is he pointing?
I don't think so. I think he's like doing a squat with his hands.
Oh, kind of like,
on his
turning
thighs.
his hat around backwards, sitting on the chair.
Yeah.
Like, let's be real for a sec.
Exactly. Number six.
Not your dad's self-help book.
This is not your dad's self-help book. Hi, I'm Larry.
Thank you.
So number six, How to Get Your Dog to Talk to You, An Essential Primer to Dog Language by Jan Silverstein.
Fake.
Yeah, it is fake.
Fake.
But it is based on a real one.
About dog language?
No, cat language.
Oh, jeez.
It's an essential primer to cat language. So you got 4 out of 4. I got to give you a pep talk. That'll be your bonus episode or something. I don't want to do it now. Number seven.
I think the people were stoked for it, man. Maybe like a little two-minute
okay,
one.
Just a little like okay. two-sentence one.
That's great.
Number seven. Are you ready for this one?
Yeah, yeah.
How to Be a Pope, What to Do, and Where to Go Once You're in the Vatican by Pierce Marchant.
Oh, I need it to be real.
It is real.
Can you imagine? Man, I don't know what I want to be when I grow up. So you go to the store and you're like, I think I'll be the Pope.
Yeah. And now you know what to do once you're in the Vatican.
Shoot right. for the stars, man.
Number eight, How to Talk to Your Husband.
Hold on. I'm not done with the Pope thing.
Okay.
Once you're in the Vatican, it said? See, this book is specifically for people that work there already?
No, this is once you've become the Pope and you're in the Vatican.
Oh, okay. So it's pretty
so
specific.
It's before, during, and after becoming a Pope.
Okay. So it's a self-help book for specifically the one Pope.
Yes.
Okay.
So How to Talk to Your
Sold
Husband.
One copies.
A Guide to Marital Communication by Sherry Smith.
Mm-hmm. That sounds real.
It's not. I made it up.
How to Talk to Your Wife, was it called?
It was like, oh, man, I don't remember what it was really called. It was something like how to get your husband to talk or something. Something like that. It was really dumb. But
waterboarding. How to?
Here's a waterboarding kit.
Yeah.
Can you sign it, please?
Yep.
Do we have anything else to plug before we move on to the end of the episode?
Nothing but my nose and my waterboarding kit.
God. Is it too soon? Dick Cheney's still alive, so I'm going to say it's too soon.
That, well, he did it to other people.
I know, exactly. Once he's gone, we can start making waterboarding jokes.
Oh, okay, we have to be, it's a very sensitive topic. We don't hurt his feelings.
Right. Well, I think that'll do it for this week. I'm Nick Wood.
I'm Jonathan.
I'm still Nick.
Oh.
I was going to do a limited cell closing, which is just saying my name. I'm still Nick.
I'm still Jonathan Johnny.
And I'm closing the episode by saying...
You can do it.
This is Stranger Still.
All right.
I give you the incredible flying machine.